Doc Talk is brought to you by Merck Animal Health. At Merck Animal Health, we're shaping the future of animal health with pioneering science, connected technology, and insights-driven solutions to bring our customers an unparalleled portfolio of choices to improve cattle care and operational efficiency. We support you and your legacy by helping you meet the challenges of today with the innovations of tomorrow.
Hey folks, welcome to Doc Talk. We're going to have Dr. Dustin Loy from the University of Nebraska's Veterinary Diagnostic Lab with us today. We're going to talk about coronavirus and cattle. Stay tuned. It's going to be a great show. Hey folks, welcome to Doc Talk. I'm Dr. Dan Thompson, and I'm here with a friend and colleague, Dr. Dustin Loy, who is the director of the Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. He's also a professor and a very established diagnostician in his own right. And thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I appreciate you taking the time. This is a busy guy. And talk about coronavirus, because it just seems like, you know, over the years, and we've talked about it, but more and more times on my D-Lab reports, coronavirus pops up, and I'm starting to trying to correlate it with more things that are going on in the field.
Yeah, so coronavirus has an interesting history. You're kind of at the root of it here at Lincoln in our department. So it was discovered in the early 1970s by Dr. Mebus. He'd recently discovered what they called the Nebraska calf diarrhea virus, and that was ended up being a rotavirus. And they were able to isolate and characterize rotavirus. But what they found was these calves that they'd immunized with rotavirus vaccine, they had customer complaints that they were still getting diarrhea. And they did some testing and found, well, it wasn't rotavirus, but it was this other new virus that they were trying to characterize. So they were able to isolate and identify that. And that was the beginning of bovine coronavirus. And it kind of became the second member of that neonatal calf viral diarrhea complex. So those two kind of have gone hand in hand since that early work in the 70s with those two viruses.
Had no clue. and so from then, we've kind of morphed into more of an understanding, correct?
Yeah, so that spun off a number of those early calf diarrhea vaccines and knowledge about those causing that syndrome. Then some Englishmen in the 80s found that they were able to find a coronavirus associated with respiratory disease. And so that kind of started the long history about understanding these newer types of viruses that were relatively unknown both in humans and animals at the time. They were just been discovered in the last 20 years when that occurred. And so a lot of research has been going on into trying to describe these viruses and what they do and how they work. So coronaviruses, as you're probably all familiar with the pandemic that we had the last several years, they're a large RNA enveloped virus that tends to cause infections in the tissues like epithelium. So in cattle, we're talking about either the respiratory or the gut, the enteric epithelium. And then they can cause a variety of problems when they do that. Like an RNA virus, that means they have the tendency to mutate. And so they have what we call a quasi-species concept. So if you're infected or an animal's infected with a coronavirus, it's not just a single virus. There tends to be a distribution of genetic variants in that population that occur. So we tend to get an infection of multiple, with very small changes, multiple viruses in an infection.
So is it different types of virus, or is it different species of, or different strains of the coronavirus itself?
They're the same virus, they're the same strain, but they have slight changes in those proteins that are important to cause them to be able to infect different types of cells.
And therefore, it causes more infections and is harder to pin down vaccine wise if it's constantly changing, correct?
Correct. That makes it harder. It's got some ability to evade immune responses, but it also accounts for this wide variety in these clinical diseases that we see. So that's why we'll have neonatal calf diarrhea. That's why we'll have winter dysentery. That's why we'll have bovine respiratory disease, because the virus is able to subtly adjust for those differences in the types of infections that it's causing.
When we come back, more with Dr. Dustin Loy here at the University of Nebraska.
DNA Dialogue is brought to you by iGenity Feeder, powered by Neogen.
Really, we feed cattle and feedlots because we're feeding them high energy diets and we're fattening them. And so we're obviously get other benefits from that, such as taste, tenderness, juiciness of the end product. But what it really comes down to is how much fat can we put on those? And we're not doing it to put on fat on the outside. It's really about the marbling inside the meat itself. But it's difficult to know marbling when the cattle are live. You don't know that until after they're marketed. So what are packers interested in? They're interested in obviously the weight and the amount of pounds that they can also produce in their line. They're interested in red meat yield, which obviously in our grid systems is a premium and discount based on yield grades. 1 and 2 is a premium. Yield grade 4 and 5 is generally a discount. And obviously, if you're not familiar, those yield grade 1 and 2 are more red meat yield. Yield grades 4 and 5 are obviously fatter relative to red meat yield. So there's a premium discount on yield grade. And then, of course, there's a premium discount on quality grade. Quality grades are usually discussed as a choice select spread, but that's really low choice compared to select. And there's premiums as you go to upper two-thirds choice, CAB, which would be black-hided and upper two-thirds choice, and then an even larger premium for prime. So what are packers interested in? Weight, yield, and obviously the most marbled beef that they can market, because they get a premium for those end products as well.
Are you a cattle feeder looking to manage for a stronger and more profitable set of cattle? Look no further than Igenity Feeder. Igenity Feeder utilizes DNA to gain insight into your cattle's genomic potential. With the information to predict performance, quality, and economic endpoints for cattle feeders, animals are scored and ranked in a simple format, driving more precise and accurate management decisions. Igenity Feeder gives you the power to predict days on feed, manage variability within lots, characterize carcass performance, and focus on metrics important to you and your operation. With the data provided, you will identify superior animals earlier and maintain high operational efficiency. Maximize your profit and optimize performance with Igenity Feeder.
Welcome back to Doc Talk. Dr. Dan Thompson here with Dr. Dustin Loy. We're at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln in the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab, where Dr. Loy serves as the director of the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab. He's also a microbiologist and great cattle diagnostician that has done so much for our industry for viral diseases, bacterial diseases. He's got new platforms to help with determining antibiotic resistance in real time, and we're just very thankful for all the work you've done.
Well, thank you. Yeah, as we were talking about, the virus has the ability to kind of shift between these different disease syndromes based on some of its genetic background. Probably the most common disease we see is neonatal calf diarrhea. So Right. Those calves that are 2 week old, they get diarrhea. And that's most commonly coronavirus or rotavirus. So those calves acquire it from the environment. They've kind of lost some of their maternal immunity, those antibodies that they get from their mother. The viruses then infect the villi in the epithelium. What's different than coronavirus and some of the other ones is that most of those villi that they infect are in, further down in the large intestine, so usually in the colon, further down than some of the other viral infections, which can infect things like small intestine.
Right.
The second one that we see is an infection of the enteric system in older cattle, which we call winter dysentery. And so that typically has been, classically we think of dairy cows that have a break of diarrhea. But where we see it most commonly is older feedlot cattle. They'll get a hemorrhagic diarrhea that looks kind of like coccidiosis. We don't find any coccidiosis or parasites, but they'll have really high levels of coronavirus. And so that's another typical clinical presentation that we
see. Is that kind of a self-limiting disease then, meaning that they just kind of, that we'll see it and they'll get over it, or will that have a high morbidity pattern with it?
It's typically low mortality, and the morbidity is variable. Sometimes we see a lot of that in a pen. Sometimes it's just one or two animals. I think the mortality is quite low because we don't very often get a look at histology or pathology. We just know that they have coronavirus in the sample. So yeah, typically it's self-limiting. The other clinical syndromes that we see are what we call summer pneumonia or calf pneumonia.
Yep.
Those pastured calves that are 60 to 90 days still out on pasture, typically they'll start presenting with fevers, lethargy. Some of those calves will progress to a more classical respiratory disease. And in those cases, we almost always find coronavirus in swabs or samples from those calves. And then probably the biggest impact one is the association with bovine respiratory disease complex. So, you know, those calves that are coming into the feedlot, first week or two, they get high fevers. We find a lot of coronavirus associated with those samples and those calves that we get that from.
When we start talking about, you know, viral diseases without complication, a lot of times we can get sick and we get over them kind of like a cold, but if they're immunosuppressed and we have the wrong things going, this can lead to some pretty serious disease.
Correct. Yeah. So that's the real, I think what coronavirus is doing is it's causing some of that immune suppression. It's interfering with the upper respiratory epithelium. So it's limiting the ability for that normal mucociliary apparatus to function properly. And then that's going to allow those really virulent things like Mannheimia or the bacterial pathogens that can secrete toxins and destroy tissue to come in there and cause the big problem.
Perfect. So from the gut to the lungs, coronavirus causing a lot of issues. And very important virus in cattle and all species. And Dr. Loy is gracious enough to be here to impart some wisdom. We didn't know that Nebraska started all this, but now we do. But it's incredible. And we're going to take a break. When we come right back, more with Dr. Dustin Loy on coronavirus. You're watching Doc Talk. Hey folks, welcome back to Doc Talk. Dr. Dan Thompson here with Dr. Dustin Loy. And Dr. Loy is a diagnostician for beef cattle. He is known internationally. He has developed things from tests for viruses to bacteria and more recently some stuff with antimicrobial resistance in real time. That's some really great tools for us as practitioners to get therapies right. But we're talking coronavirus, and one of the things you here at the lab, he's also the director of the diagnostic laboratory here, you have seen there's some papers on where this virus kind of locates.
Yeah, so one of the big mysteries about coronavirus, especially the respiratory form, is they experimentally give the virus to calves. They don't consistently get infections with respiratory disease. And so some of the work that's come out of the Iowa State Diagnostic Lab and others has shown that we might be missing it, and that the virus is really more associated with a trachea or a tracheitis. And so it's really infecting those upper airways more than the lower airways that we think about with respiratory disease. So one thing is, if you are submitting samples to the lab, make sure you suspect corona, make sure you throw in some trachea, because that may be the piece that kind of helps us solve the puzzle when we look at those different tissues.
It's hugely important.
Yeah.
That's a great piece of information. And so once these cattle get sick, obviously depending on where in the body, whether it's, the gut or lungs, treatments?
Yeah. So for respiratory disease, basically what you want to do is they're going to have high fevers and they're going to be more susceptible to those bacterial pathogens that cause in and cause that pneumonia. And what you want to do is to treat that pneumonia, you want to treat those secondary infections. So there's a whole variety of those antibiotics that, would be effective against the Mannheimia and the Pasteurella and the Histophilus that cause those infections. On the neonatal calf side, what you're really trying to treat those calves is to prevent septicemia. So you're looking at an antibiotic treatment that would suppress the bacteria that might leak out from the gut into the blood and cause a sort of what we call a sepsis type event where there's bacteria in the blood.
So if you don't mind, you know, we throw around the term sepsis and that, but let's just for the viewer's sake understand that a lot of these neonatal calf diarrheas, we're trying to treat them, and there is a likelihood or a chance that one of the bacteria, like E. coli, or that could leak out of the gut and go into the blood, correct?
Correct. Yep. And if you are using antibiotics in a young calf, that's going to be what you're treating is those bacteria that like E. coli that are going to come from the gut into the blood and cause that infection. You know, the other, you know, keeping those calves hydrated is going to be your number one thing. But if you do suspect things like sepsis, getting them treated quickly and appropriately can also help reduce the risk of death from those calves.
And that goes back to some of the other things that people should be submitting samples and working with their veterinary diagnostic lab to make sure to know what we're treating in these outbreaks, especially when it comes to those calf scour outbreaks, correct?
Yeah, because you know we have everything from parasites to viruses to bacterial causes of all those neonatal calf diarrheas, and you need to know which one because they're all going to have a potentially different therapy and a different prevention that you might want to put in place.
Wealth of information, great topic, coronavirus in beef cattle. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about vaccines and we'll talk about prevention. You're watching Doc Talk. Thanks for joining us. Hey, folks, welcome back to Doc Talk. Dr. Dan Thompson here with Dr. Dustin Loy. He is the director of the Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory here at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. He's also an extremely accomplished bovine diagnostician, somebody that I read his papers, I use and employ in practice. Just really, really practical, useful things for us to help with your herds better to improve the health. Let's talk about coronavirus vaccines and kind of, you know, what's the status of the vaccines? When do we use them? Those types of things.
Yeah, so there's two vaccines that I know of. One's used primarily for those really young calves in that first week of age to kind of give them some immunity when they're born to prevent that infection. They can also be given to the dams so that they boost the colostral immunity in the mother prior to calving. So they kind of get that little boost of anti-coronavirus immunity. The real important thing with coronavirus is that it's a, you know, an environmental disease. So you get those calves that get infected, they shed it, the environment gets contaminated. So I'm always a big advocate of the Sand Hills calving system, which is named after the Sand Hills here in Nebraska, where you can get those calves spread out in weekly cohorts so that those calves that are infected and shedding virus are going to be moved to different pastures. The ones that are born are going to be in clean pastures, and so that you can keep those animals segregated based on when they're going to start shedding virus. And so
Awesome.
those are some of the two biggest things with young calves that you can do.
Yeah, you know, we can't emphasize the Sand Hills calving system enough that, you know, it used to be we'd have this one pasture that we'd calve in, and after the cows would calve and their calves were up and sucking, getting along good, we'd kick them out and we'd leave the ones that hadn't calved in the muck. And now it makes more sense to kick the ones that haven't calved into the clean pasture.
That's right.
And keep those separate. When you start to think about coronavirus and you know the ability to transfer from animal to man, we have obviously environmental and we have vaccine. Is this a highly contagious pathogen?
So it's contagious in the sense that especially those young calves that don't have a full immunity, they're really susceptible to it. The thing that's unique about coronavirus is there aren't specific viruses that cause respiratory disease. There aren't specific ones that cause enteric disease. They're all the same, what we call serotype. The same antibodies that protect against one are going to protect against another one to some degree. So it is contagious in those young calves. When we get older and the calves get maybe out to pasture, we see more of it start to circulate when they get to that 60 to 90 day age when their maternal antibodies are basically at zero, and then they start to circulate more virus amongst themselves, and then you can have another increase in case rates in those pastured calves.
Probably important to, you know, clean up old bale rings and places where cattle congregate, where it's when it's cold, and to decrease that environmental load.
Yep, because what we see is those respiratory outbreaks that we have, those calves or some of them, there's almost always a concomitant enteric disease break. So there's a lot of that circulates. They're getting it from the environment. Some might have a fecal infection, but then it can be, you know, aerosolized, or they can acquire it from the environment.
Yep, we've seen that where all of a sudden we have a diarrhea and then 5 days later we have a respiratory disease in those calves and it's almost always corona.
Yeah.
So, well, appreciate you taking time and being on the show.
Yeah, well, thanks. Happy to be part of it.
It's great. Dr. Dustin Loy here at the University of Nebraska. Unbelievable diagnostic laboratory here for everybody in the U.S. to utilize their skills in beef cattle. Thanks for watching Doc Talk. Remember, always work with your local veterinarian. And if you want to find us on the web, you can find us at www.doctalktv.com. I'm Dr. Dan Thompson with Dr. Dustin Loy here from the University of Nebraska. We'll see you down the road.
At Merck Animal Health, we're shaping the future of animal health with pioneering science, connected technology, and insights-driven solutions to bring our customers an unparalleled portfolio of choices to improve cattle care and operational efficiency. We support you and your legacy by helping you meet the challenges of today with the innovations of tomorrow.